Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. I am one of your humble hosts, A.V. Eichenbaum, pronouns they, them. And with me, as per usual, is Lindsay Anderson. We are recording this on Trans Day of Visibility. We're celebrating some trans joy today. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm feeling joyful as a cis ally.
Sure, yeah. As a trans non-binary person. God, I hate saying that.
You hate clarifying that you're a person?
No, I don't like starting off a sentence as this.
Oh my gosh, I have a running joke about that.
Well, I just don't like that my identity puts me in a box and I have to speak as a member of this group or identity, right? And while it does give me a purpose and a place to be in a community, I feel like everyone is more than the sum of their identity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think sometimes it also reminds me of if you've ever taken like a women's and gender studies class or any class where you're talking about marginalization, there is this like select annoying group of white, queer, usually cis women that will speak on a topic that has nothing to do with queerness. And they'll be like, well, as a lesbian, as a bisexual, and then...
Well, yeah, and it's just this sort of like... weird war cry for
it's like
for us that it's like, well, I am speaking as this, but I'm not. I'm speaking as me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. I've been thinking a lot about my own transness this week because it is Trans Visibility Week and Trans Awareness Week. And yesterday I had a beard and today I don't. It feels good, but you know, I fluctuate back and forth between looking very masculine and looking a little less masculine. I've been thinking about it a lot. I started sort of secretly transitioning during the pandemic, right? And I had to quit because I didn't have any money to do it. I remember sitting in my apartment on one of those long COVID nights, high on shrooms for sure. And I jump up and I'm like, I am not a boy. You know what I mean? But then I had to really think about it. It's like, well, I'm not a girl either. Because if I looked at you right now, I know that everyone's like, well, you don't have to look feminine, you don't have to look like a woman to be a woman, but if I looked at you dead in the eyes right now and I was like, I'm a woman, I don't think most people would believe me because I don't think I believe it myself. You know, I'm somewhere nebulous and in between. I don't carry myself in a very feminine way. I'm not exactly butch, though, you know? I'm not quite a bear or an otter or a twink. Like, honestly, if anything, I carry myself like a cat that's upset to have been woken up. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So
yes, it's very accurate.
I don't know. I just, and it, there are people in the trans community that don't believe that non-binary coincides with transness, which is why when we were talking about it yesterday, I wanted to be careful about, you know, stepping over those lines because, well, I identify as trans, non-binary. Some people are just non-binary or just trans, and they don't say both identities. It's a little bit sticky, and it's a little bit hard. You know, people talk about having their egg cracked, which is like when you the moment you realize that you're trans. And for a lot of people, and myself included, they don't allow themselves to feel that way, even if they know it in their heart. Like, back in college, people would be like, oh, you'd make such a good lesbian. And I'd get this, like, warm glow inside, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But for, like, a decade after that, I just refused to do that. So I wanted to take a minute to just shout out all of the trans and trans non-binary people who maybe aren't there on their journey yet, or maybe haven't decided how to present themselves. And really, to let you know, you don't have to conform to what society's idea of a gender presentation is. And that doesn't mean that you're non-binary or not trans enough if you don't feel that way. And that's something really hard to deal with as a trans non-binary person. I just wanted to shout out everybody that maybe doesn't feel like they're trans enough or queer enough, because I'm right there with you sometimes, and you should experience joy too. Anyway, we've got a great show coming up for you today. We have Tilly Bridges, who you'll learn all about in just a second, after these messages.
Hi, this is Dr. Vigil with Vigil Family Medicine, and I would like to tell you a quick story about my primary care practice. I had a patient text me about a cat bite injury to her hand, and she was worried it was now infected. I saw her in clinic that day, cleaned the wound, and arranged for a tetanus shot and antibiotics, saving her critical time, an ER visit, and hundreds of dollars. If you want to know how direct primary care can benefit you, contact me at 253-693-0071 or at viglmd.com.
Now part of the Seattle Gay News Podcast Network, being yourself loudly illuminates the beautiful and chaotic path of becoming the best version of yourself, even if your brain is a bit chemically imbalanced. Whether you're seeking affirmation that there is more to life than just work, or you're looking for insight on how to live a more intentional life, I am your host, Isabel Mata, and I am here to serve up exactly what you need to hear. Your mental health doesn't define you. It's how you work with it, not against it, that does. Being Yourself Loudly is free to listen to and available wherever you stream your podcasts.
Joining me today via Zoom is an author I'm very excited to speak with. She's a mother, an author, and a fan, obviously, I guess, of the Matrix series, much like our very own film reviewer, Sarah Michelle Fetters. And she's a podcast host of Tilly's Trans Tuesdays, which you can check out anywhere you get podcasts, except for Spotify. And we can talk about that if you'd like. Please welcome Tilly Bridges. Tilly, hello. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm very excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to speak with you as well. You know, I've only seen the first two Matrix movies, so you're going to have to enlighten me and walk me through a lot of the things here, because our film reviewer also has commented on the transness of the film series.
Yeah.
For the listener at home, what's the premise of your book?
The premise of the book is explaining the trans allegories that permeate the entire Matrix franchise. A lot of it is my interpretation as a trans woman and a writer and a screenwriter, so I can kind of a little bit see the code behind the Matrix, right? But a little while back, people started asking me about it specifically because the Wachowskis had mentioned that they intended it to be a trans allegory. And then they walked it back a little and said, well, maybe not every frame was meant to be a trans allegory, but we were trans. And so, of course, it was on our mind and it's what we were thinking of. And when I first came out, I started Trans Tuesdays, which has now become a podcast, where I weekly write essays about the trans existence and what it's like being a trans person in this world. And as soon as I started doing that, people started asking me about the Matrix. And they're like, well, what does it mean? It was written by and directed by two trans ladies. And they say it's an allegory, but I don't know what that means. And I don't know what they're saying. So I thought, all right, this will be a fun diversion for a week, right? I've always been a fan of the movies. I always really loved them. So I thought, I'll sit down, I'll rewatch the first one and take some notes, and I'll do an essay about it. And that turned into 24 essays because I had to keep pausing the movie every 10 to 15 seconds to take notes, because what I found was that their transness is so inherent and so layered and so deep, so much more than I realized and most people realized, and I had so much to say about it. And they have so much to say about trans existence. I accidentally wrote a book because of that. I didn't set out to, but there were some 60,000 words after it was all said and done, and that got me a book deal. So that's what the book is, sort of reformatted to be digested at once. It works best if you read it while you're watching the movies. Most of it is timestamps asking you to look specifically at what is on the screen, because the shot compositions, the usage of color, all of it plays into what they're trying to say about the trans experience. They go very, very deep.
And what do you believe, I guess, in a nutshell, that they are trying to say about the trans experience?
The interesting thing, and that I was also surprised to discover, is that each movie speaks to a different part. And the four movies chart one person's transition. And it goes from Thomas Anderson to Neo to Trinity. The whole point of the series, as far as the allegories go, is one person's journey from where they started to their true self. So the first movie is about recognizing that you're trans and coming to accept it and choosing to transition. And Reloaded is about all the ways society comes for you once you're out as trans that you don't realize until you come out, and how difficult that makes your life. And would you still have transitioned if you knew how hard it was going to be? And choosing that, yes, even knowing how hard it would be, I would have still done this because being my true self is worth it. And then Revolutions is about dealing with our own internalized transphobia and where we hope society can go in the future, moving forward. How can we make things better for trans people? And then Resurrections is about detransitioning and then retransitioning. And it's also about the co-opting and silencing of trans voices, very specifically. So through all four of those, and I take you through them movie by movie in the book, you can chart one person's journey all the way through to fully self-actualizing as their true self.
That is absolutely fascinating. And I...
Yeah, isn't it? Blew my mind.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pick up a copy of the book. Sounds right up my alley. Let's talk a little bit about you and who you are.
Sure. I am a screenwriter living in Los Angeles. As you mentioned, I am a mom. I am a wife. That's most of my deal. I'm a podcaster. I've been podcasting for a very long time. I co-run and co-executive produce a podcasting company, Pendant Productions. Most of our shows are scripted. We've been doing that for a very long time. I've won a whole mess of awards for it, which is really cool. We also write comics. My wife and I write all of our fiction together as a team. Right now we're writing for the new Monster High animated show on season 2. The show's still in season 1, so you won't see our episodes for a while, but we're working on that. We've done other TV work that NDAs say we can't talk about yet. And we're also this year head writers of the Nebula Awards. So that's fun.
Wow, that's really great. What drew you to Monster High specifically?
Well, we got an offer to work on it, which is the first and most important thing.
Yes.
But yeah, the thing about the show that I really love is it's a reimagining of monsters from horror stories as high school kids. Mm-hmm. And that comes with as much fun and goofiness as you might think. The show is really, really charming. And it's also one of the most inclusive shows on television, even outside of just animation. The most amazing thing that my wife and I always say is that we were so lucky to get the offer to work on this show, because it's a show we would have loved even if we weren't working on it. I mean, we do love it. We love watching it. It's just so much fun. It's really a blessing for it to not just be a job, but to be something that you're really proud to work on and be part of.
Yeah, it sounds great. We've had the founder of the Queer Screams Film Festival has been on the show, and that's in Portland. And we've talked before about the queerness that's just inherent in the horror genre, even if it's just monsters as a concept, you know? And it's nice to know that it's one of the most inclusive shows out there.
It is, yeah. It's very, I guess, ethnically diverse. It's very racially diverse. It's got queerness right in it. One of the three main characters is non-binary. And there's more of that coming along. I can't talk about stuff that hasn't aired yet, but it's very inclusive in just about every way you could imagine. Body type, skin tone, everything. It's just, it's so cool. There's so few shows out there that are really like that, that are really working to make sure everyone feels included. It's got disability representation. It's got neurodiversity. It's just, it's really, really impressive.
Let's jump back to The Matrix for a second. Were you a fan of the franchise before people started asking you about this and writing the book?
Oh yeah. And I loved them before I ever understood I was trans. And I always connected with them on a really deep level that I didn't understand. And of course I do now. And it's because they were telling me my own story and I didn't recognize it as my own yet. It actually helped explain to me why I always felt so connected to them. I was always a big defender of the sequels, which are often derided by many people, but I would challenge the people who think they're not very good that maybe you just didn't understand what they were saying. And I didn't understand what they were saying until I knew I was trans and could see them through these eyes. They're really important, and I think, and they're really beloved by the trans community for a really good reason. There's really nothing out there, even today, still all these years later, that speaks to the trans experiences completely and as deeply as those movies do.
And do you think the journey for The Matrix is over? Do you think it's going to continue onwards past this last installment in the franchise? Or do you hope for it?
That is a very complex question. I feel like I don't know if the studio Warner Brothers will let it lie. There's a big part of the fourth one was a sort of meta commentary on how they might have made the movie without the Wachowskis if Lana didn't come back to write and direct it. Mm-hmm. They might have made it without them, and then it wouldn't have been anything close to what they ever wanted it to be. And so I feel like we'll never know how much of that was based in reality, but I feel like it was definitely inspired by it. And so I feel like it might be continued without them. But I also kind of feel that without their involvement, it wouldn't be what it is. It wouldn't be what makes The Matrix matrixy. I don't know. It wouldn't be it without them. It needs their vision and that transness in there. I think that the fourth movie completed the story so perfectly that I would be perfectly happy if that's where it ended. Mm-hmm. Or if it morphed from there to be a vehicle for other trans people to tell stories within that framework, that would be really beautiful. But for Neo's journey from Thomas Anderson to becoming Trinity, I feel like that tells the story as completely as it could. And that was one thing that really surprised me, is because the third movie has a really hopeful ending. It really hopes for the best, for the future. And then the fourth says that didn't come to pass. And look how much that hurts us when society betrays us like this, and what that can do to a person. the ending of the fourth one is what felt inevitable, because the ending of the third movie, when we all thought it was done for good, it didn't complete the transition. It didn't complete the journey, and it stopped there. But the fourth does, and it gets there, and it's beautiful in the way that it does. So if that is the end of Neo's story, I would be really, really happy, because I think that is the end of Neo's story. And if the Wachowskis have more to say, there is still more to say about trans life, then I would definitely be interested in hearing that. But if they're not involved, then I think it's probably not worth continuing on.
Makes sense. This is sort of an aside, but that kind of reminds me of another Keanu Reeves joint, the Bill and Ted trilogy, where in the sequel, you know, they have this sort of brighter hope for the future, and then we see that that hasn't come to pass, and then it's actually the job of the future generations to carry on. You said that one of the films was about, the most recent one was about co-opting the trans voice and the trans point of view. Do you have, I guess, examples off the top of your head of how that happens in media?
Well, the way you see it most often in media is with trans stories being told by cis people and telling their versions of our stories, or making themselves the saviors in our stories. They want to tell these trans stories, but they don't want us to tell them. I have experienced things with my wife when we are pitching very trans projects that people ask us for. They say, we'd love to help get trans stories out there. Could you pitch us some? And we pitch them trans stories, and then they say, no, not like that. That's not the trans story we want, because the trans stories don't look like cis stories. They're different, and they're going to be different because we have a different experience of personhood. So that's a big deal. I think another one that is very specifically dealt with is the co-opting of the Wachowskis' voices from the original movies, with the appropriation of the red pill by men's rights activists and everybody who stands for the exact opposite of what that meant, right?
Yes.
A pill is literally an estrogen pill that Neo is taking. The estrogen pills were red in the 90s when the Wachowskis were making those movies. It was called Premarin. You can look it up. So they're taking this beautiful thing that the Wachowskis were saying about truth and love and loving yourself enough to be your true self, and turning it into the opposite of that as a tool for discrimination and hate. And they saw it coming right in the first movie. Morpheus has that line where he calls out the people that are so helplessly inured to the system that they can't even see that they're part of it, or that they uphold it and defend it without even realizing that's what they're doing. And that's those guys. They're so far inside the system, they think they're outside, right? They think that they're the disruptors. They think that they're the ones who are, you know, awake. And yet what they perpetuate is everything that society, our cis white male-led society, already perpetuates, which is the exclusion of the other and the elevation of this cis white man over everyone else, which the movies have a lot to say about. Every single police officer, security guard, FBI agent, the analyst, the architect, they're all cis white men. And that is for a reason. They're always through every movie, because they're the ones who benefit from this system of oppressing everyone who's not them. You know, there's a whole lot of politics wrapped up in it, all the way through all of the movies.
It's really interesting that you brought up the red pill thing. I mean, I know it's already part of it, but I was listening to, by happenstance this morning, this interview with this guy, Douglas Murray. Are you familiar with the?
No.
He's an anti-trans sort of right-wing.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wrote this book that they were talking about that's called The Madness of Crowds. And right off the bat, he's like, yeah, so the madness is gay people, race theory, and transness. And I was like, oh fuck, what are we gonna do here? What are we doing, bud? And I was like, should I keep listening? And he kept talking. He's got a very lovely British accent. That's the best thing I can say about this jackass. I was thinking about, it's exactly the same thing, is they're talking about how this is the view of the right and these red pill people, which is unfortunate that they've taken this terminology, right? The other is bad. One of his points was like, well, what's so bad about history? Why are we looking back at history and scoffing at it, you know, when everything is great for everybody? It's the best it's ever been for the trans community. It's the best it's ever been for the LGBTQ plus community, which is not the case. Of course, this interview was a couple of years ago, but he's continued to perpetuate these things about, quote, wokeness or whatever. Do you have any further thoughts on that? I guess we see it enacted now, especially in anti-trans rhetoric, the red pill mindset.
I mean, I think they're all the same. They all stem from the same thing. I mean, the movies literally show you that it's one of the most blatant metaphors. A lot of what I talk about in the book I call super text, which it's like what they're saying is so obvious. There's no way you can miss it. Just look at this right here. And one of those things is that in the first movie, when Neo wakes up, he takes the pill and he wakes up in the pod. He has begun his transition. And the first thing he sees when he looks out is how every other human is literally used as power for the Matrix. The Matrix in the movies is the cisgender binary, right? It's what we're all forced into at birth without our consent. Mm-hmm. It's the box that they use to order our society that keeps the cis white men in charge. And they are literally extracting power from us to give to themselves. They are taking our power. They take our voices. They take our everything and twist it and turn it to keep themselves at the top. So that's where all of these vectors of discrimination come from. It's racism, it's ableism, it's ageism, it's fatphobia, it's transphobia, it's homophobia. They're all the same. They're all that bigotry is rooted at the same place, which is keeping the cis white men at the top. It's why our society is so sexist. And there's these patriarchal standards of beauty that all women are supposed to conform to. And it's all connected. It's where it all comes from. And so I think they will use any tool that they can find, no matter who created it or what it was intended for or where it comes from, because they know that there are more of us than there are of them. And if we are united, they're going to lose. They will always lose. Equality and inclusion will always win because there are more of us, and we know that we all deserve to be equal to each other. So I think that's where the transphobia specifically and all these other phobias and bigotries come from. It's this fear that they have, that they know that they are very tenuously holding on to power. And if they don't gerrymander elections to keep it that way in the red states, they're going to lose it, and they're not going to get it back after that because there's too many of us. Maybe that wasn't that coherent, but...
No, that's beautifully said. I was about to comment. Wonderfully said. Thank you so much. Well, the book is called Begin Transmission by Tilly Bridges. You can pre-order it now at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, anywhere books are sold. And where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Tilly Bridges. Actually, I'm at Tilly Bridges on just about all the social medias. My Trans Tuesdays are at tillystranstuesdays.com, as you mentioned. If you are interested in the fiction writing that my wife and I do as a team, you can go to birdguest.com. That is our writing website and has all of our credits and links to our work and everything up there. So if you are looking for a cool trans woman, cis woman, married writing team, we may be the only one in existence. Now you know where to find us.
Fantastic. And before we get back to our show, is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with on our way out?
I think just that the main message of the movies is that we are all connected, and we are all in this together, and we owe it to each other to look out for each other, to stand up for each other, and to fight together for a better world.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
And we're back. You know, I've been talking for a while. You guys have heard a lot of my voice. I'm going to pass the mic over to Lindsay. Let's talk about that anti-trans restroom bill that passed in Idaho.
Oof, yeah. Love to see how Idaho celebrates. They have six more anti-LGBTQ bills that are currently being monitored by the ACLU. This bill that just passed was one of those. And I don't know, just fuck the state to our right, I guess.
Withhold sex from anyone from Idaho.
Yes. As somebody that grew up right on the border, that's something I very strongly believe in and used to share with all my friends. Under the guise of protecting children, though, they have passed this recent anti-LGBTQ law that will target specifically transgender people. It was signed on March 23rd. It specifically regards school restrooms, changing rooms, and things like lodging for school trips. Does it also affect lodging for college students in dormitories?
There are so many house bills right now in Idaho that affect so many different things for, you know, gender-affirming care that I have lost track, and it's happening all across the country. There are like 445 anti-trans bills in the works across the country. I'm really having trouble keeping track. That should be a red flag, right?
What makes this bill stand out, maybe among all of those many bills that we're seeing and are so hard to keep track of, is that this one is specifically targeting children and minors. And what really gets me is this part in the article where Benny quotes the bill that states that students having to share restrooms and changing facilities with members of the opposite biological sex generates potentially embarrassment, shame, and psychological injury. So they care more about the psychological injury and shame and embarrassment that cis students might have to encounter, but they don't take in the humanity or the embarrassment or the shame or the psychological injury that comes with outing trans students, which is going to happen because of these bills. It makes me angry.
It should make you angry. We're not considered human. It's this whole thing where, this is a side note, but I had family come up and visit. I had one of my aunts, one of my plethora, my cornucopia of relatives came and visited, and they deadnamed me for an entire day, and they used the wrong pronouns, and I corrected them a couple of times, and it just, they're like, oh, sorry. Right. But they just very pointedly didn't use my own pronouns or my name, which I've been going by for many years now. The sense that I got was they were infantilizing me, and in doing so, dehumanizing me. I became less of a person that they'd known their whole life and more of a concept of a person. And when you take a concept of a person and you shrink it down to its very base elements, what you get is the identity that you are most comfortable with, and that's what you stick with in your head, right? But when it comes to things like this, we have an entire demographic of Republicans, mostly senators, congressmen, House representatives, yada yada, all these right-wing people who are working on a very small bit of information that they have essentially plucked out of thin air and made up and turned into, like, this is the trans person. This is who I'm afraid of, right? They've created a straw man of a terrifying trans bathroom goblin. It's because they don't think of us as human, they think of us as an idea. Like, I can't even start to get into the non-binariness of it all, because they just don't get it. So, to talk about one of your favorite subjects, TikTok, right? We can actually see the disconnect. The TikTok ban trial that's going on, the hearings that are happening. It's very clear that they don't know what the hell TikTok is, or like what an algorithm is. They have an idea of a scary spying app, which I'm not saying it's not spying on us, because all of your apps are spying on you. If you're going to use them, just get over it. You've already sacrificed your privacy. Sorry. That's just how it is in the 21st century. We live in a hellscape. So they don't understand what TikTok is, and they don't understand what transness is, because they've created these weird, scary ideas of what they are, and instead of learning, what does this actually mean?
They're so trapped in their own dichotomies of hypocrisy that they can't get out of this web they've spun. I mean, when we look at the trans bathroom bills, again, going back to Idaho, a lot of the reasons that they cite for wanting to pass more bills that will regulate trans people, specifically trans youth, is that they think that the LGBTQ community is sexualizing children. But gender and sexuality are different things, and they are the ones that start policing and sexualizing people when they determine that you are who you are based on the genitalia you have. But the LGBTQ community is not focused primarily on genitalia. You know, that's not the conversations that we're having around transness and gender identity. It's about expression. It's about how you feel, not about sex. So there's that. And I think that that ties in with the TikTok bill as well, because it's the Republicans that are mostly against TikTok, and they are the party of free speech and the First Amendment. They don't always cite it when they're giving these trials about TikTok, but one of the things I hate the most about TikTok is that it gives a platform for people to amplify their free speech, specifically young people. TikTok has been really important for Gen Z in mobilizing and organizing political activism. It's something that a lot of older generations have noted about Gen Z, is that we're a very political generation, and yet we lack the organizational skills that previous political generations, like hippie boomers from the 70s, had. And TikTok gives us that tool. TikTok has allowed for young people to reserve all the seats at Trump rallies, you know, so he's speaking to an empty room, and to flood tip hotlines about teachers teaching critical race theory. And I think that that's kind of the biggest threat that it poses right now. And that's why they want to regulate it and ban it in the United States.
Yeah, it also, trans talk exists, right? It creates a community of safety around seeing people like you when otherwise you might feel alone. I think that's why a lot of people were drawn to it back in 2020, was that it very quickly and very readily found your communities and your interests for you. That's a little terrifying if you think about it too much. At the same time, it's very comforting when you think you're alone in the world to know, oh, there is someone with a similar journey. And we kind of do that in our own way at Radio SGN and at the paper, but they did it on a global scale that hadn't been seen before. And that could be terrifying for someone who's already afraid of change. Let's talk about your gay day.
My gay day, yes!
Yes, let's talk about that, because we worked out a deal with Seattle Pride, and they do a 2-page spotlight at the end of every month with us. Shout out Seattle Pride. Hey, how's it going, guys? And this month, they requested that Lindsay just go out and have a good time and tell people about it. I did have to cut the poem at the beginning of your article, because it was just a little too out there for me.
Okay, that's fair.
Quoting yourself in your own article, bud, a little rough.
I had a lot of fun with this.
I know you did, so I'll take the wheel.
Well, if you're missing the poem, this is how it goes. Gone with the gray, the sun's out to stay. It is time to have a gay day. That's my poem, original work. I have an English degree. And thank you. Thank you for the snaps.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
So this is basically just, if I had all the time, money, and stomach space to fit all of this in one day, I definitely would. For me, I need to be honest on this podcast. This was actually more of a gay weekend because I can't eat this many meals in a day. But these are all the best things, according to my expertise, to do specifically in Capitol Hill, although it branches out all over Seattle. So to quote myself here, the ideal gay day does not start before 10 a.m. So you should enjoy the comfort of sleeping as long as possible. Once you wake up, you're going to want some brunch on your gay day. The best place to get brunch in Capitol Hill is Olmsted. It gives you a fancy vibe. The food is delicious, but it doesn't cost as much as you'd think it should for how good the food is and how big the portions are. And Olmsted does not open until 10 a.m., so you have to sleep in, because what else are you going to do with your gay day morning? Olmsted serves brunch until 2 p.m., so you've got a pretty wide window there. And it's also a great location that doubles as an events venue with a lot of queer comedy nights, especially at the beginning of the month with Flock, which is produced by a friend of mine, Juno Men, and Kinky, which is produced by queer comedian Bobby Higley. So super fun if you're looking for something there. But next off, you'll want to do some shopping, because what else are you going to do with your gay day if you're not shopping? Of course, there's nothing gayer than vintage shopping and thrift shopping. A couple of my favorite locations are Lifelong Thrift in Capitol Hill, where Ash got a 2-piece suit for, what was it, like $5?
$8.
$8, yes.
And then my janky credit card fucked up their whole system for like an hour. Good times.
Yeah. There's always something you didn't know you needed, but you'll find it there at Lifelong Thrift. Super shout out to Lifelong Thrift as well. If you're doing some spring cleaning and looking to donate stuff, they're the best place to donate anything, because they make use of everything you donate. If they can't sell it at their store, they will provide it for free to people experiencing homelessness. They will take things to recycle. Overall, a great business. You should support them 100%.
They also carry the paper.
They do, yes. Next place that also carries the paper is Red Light Vintage. It's kind of like getting to go to a museum for free if you don't buy anything there, but you should buy something if you go. I have a shirt that I got from there a couple weeks ago that was made in the 50s. It's great quality. If you're gonna drop $50 on a shirt, get a vintage shirt from Red Light Vintage instead of something from like H&M, because it's gonna last you way longer. They're timeless pieces. So
yeah, if you're spending $50 on anything from H&M, you're getting ripped off.
That's true. Maybe
fuck fast fashion.
Urban Outfitters, I think, is...
Oh, my heart. Oh, my goodness. Just the mid-2010s hipster in me just kicked me in the spleen. Oh, my Lord. Please go on.
Okay, so if you're looking for another Urban Outfitters style dupe, you have to check out Standard Goods. It's my absolute favorite store, kind of in the whole world. I'm obsessed with it. First of all, I don't think a single cis straight person works at Standard Goods. If they listen, they can correct me, but I walk in there and it feels like Pride 24/7. They have just the best kind of millennial, Gen Z, ironic everything. They have like boob-shaped candles. They have candles scented like national parks. They have ironic totes and sassy socks and cards for every occasion. The image in our article has a card that says like, so gay for you, but literally they have cards for like coming out, cards for your gay wedding, your gay baby, cards for congratulations on not killing your plant. It's the best. I love Standard Goods. And also the clothes are really cute and good quality. Next, we've got the hidden gem that sells hidden gems, Sankufka Goods. This is in Broadway. It's very kind of tucked away. You've got to go like up the stairs and back, but you'll smell it because they are always burning incense there. It's a great place. The vibes are just perfect in there. And don't steal anything, because if you do, I'm pretty sure you'll be haunted for the rest of your life. The next thing on your gay day is you're going to want to have a picnic in Volunteer Park. If they do have Scooby Dogs there, you definitely want to pick it up because it's the best vegan hot dogs. Speaking of foods that you'll want to try on your gay day, Baitong is a must-see, especially for their fairy flight, which is adorable. I can't explain it more than that. You have to go and try it for yourself. And then, of course, you can't end a gay day without some good drinks, whether it's boba at High Tea Cafe or on tap margaritas from Nacho Barracho. There's always something for everybody in Capitol Hill. That's the best gay day you could have.
Great. My day is very different from that. but I appreciate all the energy and effort you put into that. Most of my gay day is just like I make some coffee and then I read about bats down by a lake or in a forest somewhere. I feel like if I didn't live in Seattle right now, I'd still be considered cottagecore. Like, I would have gone further in that direction than I sort of urbanized myself when I moved up here.
I feel like Seattle is the urban hub for cottagecore, though. Like, you know?
Yeah,
you can have
yeah,
all the
that's
vibes
fair.
Live in a 100-year-old apartment building.
That's what I do. So I want to share some other good news. This is actually SGN related, and we are now proud sponsors of the softball team, the Puget Sound Pronouns, which is very exciting for me. I am sort of a sports fan, like in a passive way. Growing up, I was in track and field and basketball and all that. My whole family, they can be sports nuts. I ended up going in a different direction with my life, because musical theater and track and field kind of intersected. The schedules were hard to keep up. So the Emerald City Softball Association is kicking off their 44th season. It just happened April 2nd, so I hope you checked it out. We're going to start having in the newspaper their play schedule. That all takes place at North SeaTac Park, which is where they play, which is a little out of the way for a lot of folks in Cap Hill, but hey, you really should check them out. You know, there are a lot of LGBTQ sports in Seattle. There are sort of mixed leagues of queer and not queer, straight and cis and trans. The Emerald City Softball Association is the premier LGBTQIA plus softball league in Seattle. And they're all just delightful. I got to meet them at the Seahawks-sponsored Diversity Summit last year, around this time. I'm just really stoked to be a part of this. We're going to get little hats as well. Their team colors are the trans flag colors for the Puget Sound Pronouns. So, go pronouns! Play ball!
My pronouns are base and ball. I bet somebody on Fox News has said that before.
I'm 100% sure that Ted Cruz has been like, my pronouns are butter.
Have you seen this? There was a compilation The Daily Show made this week of all of Ted Cruz and like conservative politicians making the same pronoun joke of being like, my pronouns are fuck off. And it's like, okay.
Wow. My favorite one is when Tim Allen, he thought it was going to be like a really edgy anti-trans joke. You know, he has a sitcom, but it ended up just being like a pretty solid joke that all drag queens use. And he'd just never seen a drag show.
What was the joke?
He was like, I'm going to be giving a speech to these people, and they're all younger than me, so I'm going to say, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone who's on the fence. That was his joke, and I have heard that at a drag brunch at least 5 times. Like any queer sort of thing, and it's a gag that people make, and it's fine when the LGBTQ community does it, but the laugh track on Tim Allen's show, which I think it's called Last Man Standing or some shit. The laugh track like just roars with laughter as if it's the most original, very hurtful joke for the trans community. And it cracks me up because like he actually found himself stumbling into queer comedy without knowing it.
Tim Allen, his greatest work was The Shaggy Dog.
I think his greatest work specifically was the Tim the Tool Guy grunt. Just the grunt. Nothing else about that show really appeals to me, though, that I've gone back and watched a few episodes because I'm not 4 anymore.
Well, before we wrap, could I share some happy dog news?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. So, dear listeners, you may recall I had a foster dog named Beatrice and all of her puppies living with me. and they have since all found homes, which is wonderful. But Beatrice is back because her owner is going on a vacation for the weekend, so I'm dog-sitting her. And they told me the most wholesome story about Beatrice. They're just moving into a new apartment complex, and Beatrice barks at everybody, man, woman, non-binary person, child, cat. And they were walking, and this like older couple is coming down, and they were afraid Beatrice was going to bark at them, and she didn't bark at them. And the old people came and pet her. They were like, oh, this is Beatrice. And they were like, is this Cheryl's Beatrice? And she was like, what? And they were like, did Beatrice's old owner die? And she did. And these were Beatrice's old owner's best friends, and she remembered them, and that's why she didn't bark at them. And she was so happy to see them, and it just made my day, made me cry a little bit. I was like, that's so sweet. So that's my happy Beatrice story.
That's really beautiful. I also have a happy story that's not related to that at all, if I could share.
Oh, please do. We need some on this day.
So I listen to a lot of queer musical artists that we don't talk about on the show because they're not very popular outside of certain circles, like metal circles and stuff. But I just found a doom metal band that's two non-binary people called Vile Creature, and it is amazing. That was what brought me joy before this recording, and it is not even on the same level of cuteness, because a 6-foot tall metalhead telling you to go listen to a band who has a 40-minute long song is not really on the same level of cuteness, you know what I mean? I know I said we weren't going to do any more pop culture corners for a couple episodes, but I just, because it's Trans Day of Visibility, I want to shout out a few trans and non-binary musical artists that aren't Sam Smith or Kim Petras. If that's cool.
That is cool, but My Coconuts slaps.
Look, I'm not saying that it's not a bop. You know what I mean? I just have other tastes in music. I'll listen to pop music on occasion. I'll listen to the radio.
Well, while you look for your playlist, I'll plug Cave Town.
Oh, Cave Town, for sure. Absolutely. But I also want to say Pansy Division is not they're not trans, but they are a gay punk band from a while back, and they have a song that I love called Femme in a Black Leather Jacket that is all about this guy who's very femme. You know, that to me screams, you know, trans or non-binary vibes. Dog Park Dissidents, my favorite song by them is Queer as in Fuck You. They've got three non-binary members. She, Her, Hers is a folk punk group. Or maybe it's just one person, I don't actually know, but Gender is Boring is a great song by her. One of my first introductions to trans folk punk especially was Pigeon Pit, which they're from Santa Cruz, and they actually have a song. It mentions a punk venue that I used to hang out at a lot, and then they moved up to Olympia, and now they play in Seattle all the time. We moved up around the same time, so it's really cool to see that they've gotten pretty popular and are touring the U.S. And of course, Vile Creature, if you don't mind screaming and very long doom metal songs. Anyway, that's our show. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us. Remember that you're like a human being. You know what I mean? Remember you're a human being. People don't think of queer people and trans people as people, but you are. Thank you so much for listening. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Seattle Gay News or at radio.sgn. You can follow us online on Facebook still for Seattle Gay News. You can find us at sgn.org. Lindsay, you want to say anything real quick?
I guess just have a good Trans Day of Visibility. Oh, this is coming out after that.
This is coming out after that, yeah.
Then have a good Monday, trans people.
Thank you again so much for listening, and we'll see you in the funny pages.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson, and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show is provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org or wherever you find podcasts.
This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.